Hello, everyone. This is another in a series of essays that we are recording and publishing on the website that will be part of a book that will be published in the early part of 2023. The essay today is on gun control. It's entitled Liberal Gun Control, What is the Real Endgame? And it begins with the caption, Socialism, ideas so good that they have to be mandatory. First, a short history of Canadian gun control. History of gun control in Canada has demonstrated that it has been largely ineffectual in terms of reducing firearms-related crimes. Rifles and shotguns are relatively easy to obtain, while handguns and semi-automatic rifles are restricted. The Criminal Law Amendment Act was a gun control passed by the Pierre Trudeau Liberals in 1977. Several studies have found that it had no impact on reducing homicide and robbery rates, and one such study even found that it may have actually increased robberies involving firearms. Another study in 2012 looked at gun control laws passed in Canada between 1974 and 2008. It found no evidence that these laws had a beneficial effect on firearm-related homicide rates. According to that study, other more salient factors were found to be associated with homicide rates, such as median age, unemployment, immigration rates, poverty, population per police officer, and incarceration rates. A 2013 study of the 1995 Firearms Act reported little evidence that it significantly reduced rates of lethal gun violence against women. This was the principal demographic identified by Prime Minister Trudeau in his press conference announcing his government's 1 May 2020 order in council banning 1,500 kinds of military-style semi-automatic rifles. In typical virtue-signaling fashion, this announcement came on the heels of highly publicized deadly shootings in Nova Scotia. Subsequent study of the details of this order in council revealed that both the scope of the ban and the government's obsession with disarming Canada's civilian population are much broader than they first appear. The question then is, given a domestic historical record showing the lack of a causal nexus between gun control and crime reduction, why is the Liberal government so intent upon taking firearms out of the hands of law-abiding Canadians? Let's look next at a brief history of repressive regimes and their gun laws. Although gun control laws are not all created equal in terms of overall impact, gun confiscation holds a special place in the halls of political repression. A trip down memory lane will give us a refresher on how gun confiscation has helped to consolidate state power under authoritarian regimes. First, the USSR and its Iron Bloc. The Soviet Union left its mark as one of the deadliest political regimes of the 20th century, and indeed in the entire history of mankind. However, it could not have committed such atrocities without a total monopoly on coercion. Ironically, Lenin called for a proletarian militia in his famous essay, Letters from Afar, in which he charted his vision. Quote, "What kind of militia do we need, the proletariat, all the people? A genuine people's militia, i.e. one that first consists of the entire population of all adult citizens of both sexes, and second, one that combines the functions of a people's army with police functions, with the functions of the chief and fundamental organ of public order and public administration." End quote. Lenin's ideas manifested themselves in military form once the Military Revolution Committee was created in 1917. Despite its ostensible revolutionary nature, these military forces soon morphed into simply another enforcement arm of the state. To maintain its iron grip, the Soviets turned to the most proven form of suppression, gun confiscation. In December of 1918, the Council of People's Commissar, by what was analogous to the Liberals' recent order in council, mandated that all Soviet citizens surrender their firearms under threat of criminal prosecution. Soviet gun control laws remained tight in succeeding decades, although the government did go out of its way to ensure that Communist Party affiliates maintained privileged access to its firearms. Post-World War II, Soviet satellite states such as Bulgaria, East Germany, Hungary, and others imposed similar restrictions upon gun possession. And the result, it is estimated that at least 15 million people perished under Soviet rule. Let's look next at Nazi Germany. These days, the label Nazi is tossed around liberally, almost rendering its true definition meaningless. However, the history of Nazi Germany must never be forgotten. Increasingly, both sides of the gun debate make mistakes when discussing Nazi gun control policy. The pro-gun control side claims that gun rights were actually expanded under Nazi rule, but there is more to this story. The marginal liberalization in gun laws specifically favored the German populace. In 1938, Hitler signed a new gun control act. By that time, just as in Canada, legislative debate of such laws was obsolete. Now that many enemies of the state had been removed from society, some restrictions could be slightly liberalized, especially for party members. But Jews were prohibited from working in the firearms industry, and 22 caliber hollow point ammunition was banned entirely. Consequently, the Jews were disarmed and had no means of defending themselves against the increasingly militant and armed Nazi operatives like the SA, the SS, or the Gestapo. But pro-gun advocates are not exempt from making similar mistakes. They attribute gun control's passage exclusively to Hitler's government. However, a more thorough review of history reveals that the Weimar Republic was responsible for passing gun registration laws. They justified the passage of gun control laws in the cause of public order, for fear of groups like the Nazis or communists coming to blows in the streets, as in the famous Munich Beer Hall Putsch of 1923 that resulted in Adolf Hitler's arrest and imprisonment. This gun control framework would ultimately be exploited by the Nazis to disarm Jews and subject them to one of the most horrific genocides in human history. Now let's take a look at Cuba. Once one of Latin's most prosperous nations, Cuba succumbed to the siren song of socialism after Castro seized power in 1959. This was largely out of necessity, since the revolution alienated Cuba from the U.S. and left Castro running into the welcoming arms of the Soviet Union. Just as in Nazi Germany, Castro took advantage of existing firearms registration lists. Once Batista was deposed, Castro took power and in a famous speech exclaimed, "Guns? What? To fight against whom? Against the revolutionary government that has the support of the people?" The Castro government began targeting rival revolutionary groups who fought the Batista regime but were non-communists. Then, Castro broadened the legal definition of rival revolutionaries to disarm most Cuban civilians. These strict firearms regulations remain in force even today. The Ministry of the Interior and the Ministry of the Revolutionary Armed Forces are in charge of regulating firearms. Like other socialist regimes, the Cuban experience has been marked by mass death and economic destruction. Estimates point to 141,000 Cubans murdered by the Castro regime, with millions more fleeing to the U.S. to escape such tyranny. Now let's look at a more recent example, Venezuela. It is well known that the Venezuelan government has eviscerated property rights and fundamental civil liberties in the crisis-belagered country. But how has this government been able to maintain its power? The Venezuelan government's disarmament campaign is an oft-overlooked source of human rights violations in that country. The Venezuelan government under Chavez, who became a close friend and puppet of Castro, started by passing the Control of Arms, Munitions, and Disarmament Law. Since then, the law has been expanded so that Venezuelan armed forces have the power to register, control, and confiscate firearms. Despite the gun ban there, crime rates continue to skyrocket. Venezuelans now have no way to defend themselves against a government that is free to muzzle their speech, expropriate their wealth, debase their currency, and starve them to death. They must also contend with the constant threat of common criminals and colectivos, Venezuela's notorious pro-government paramilitary units. Consequently, even in the 21st century, the incalculable human cost of gun confiscation are still being felt around the world. Now let's turn to Canada, Prime Minister Trudeau's gun bans. Since retaining a minority government control in October of 2019, the Liberals have exploited the coronavirus pandemic as a convenient means of taking authoritarian control of all spending, taxation, corporate nationalization, and other policies. Liberals engineered a coalition with the NDP to shut down Parliament, effectively giving them, at the very least, several more years of undemocratic rule. Justin Trudeau is also an admitted admirer of the CCP and of Fidel Castro. And there are upwards of 20 million guns legally owned by Canadians for hunting, recreation, competition, collection, and predator control. There are at least 2.2 million Canadians with legal firearms licenses. There are over 75,000 legally registered AR-15 rifles, wrongly condemned by Trudeau for political exploitation in the wake of the 2020 Nova Scotia rampage as military-grade assault rifles. But the AR-15 is not a military-grade assault rifle. In fact, the AR in its name stands for Armor Light Rifle, which is Colt Manufacturing LLC's way of honoring the company that created it back in the 1950s. In addition to the AR-15 issue, firstly, there are 90,000 Canadians, mainly law enforcement and the military, who are required to carry loaded guns every day. Secondly, there are 300,000 Canadians with firearms licenses who own at least one registered handgun. Thirdly, there are 3,000 guns bought and sold in Canada every day by police-vetted individuals. Based upon the history that we have chronicled here, is it too absurd to think that our democratically elected but now autocratic Liberal government is confiscating guns in order to prevent armed resistance by Canadians? Before you answer, consider one final example from history. The Club of Rome was founded in 1968 with the mission to basically create a world crisis and then globalize socialism. Sound familiar? Something like World Economic Forum, perhaps? Mikhail Gorbachev, the late Mikhail Gorbachev, was a member. So was Pierre Trudeau, the man who suspended civil liberties in Canada in 1970 by enacting the War Measures Act during the FLQ crisis in Quebec. As the Club of Rome wrote in 1991, quotes, "Every state has been so used to classifying its neighbors as friend or foe, the sudden absence of traditional adversaries has left governments with a great void to fill. New enemies have to be identified, new strategies imagined. In searching for a common enemy against whom we can unite, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, and famine would fit the bill." End quote. That's 1991. Sound familiar, folks? It's happening right now. This is the playbook. Three decades on, Canadians must all seriously ponder what is now happening under the Trudeau Liberals, the Trudeau Liberals, who are using a panic-driven state of constant emergency to reshape Canada into a post-nation state bearing absolutely no resemblance to the libertarian Christian constitutional democracy it was just a few scant years ago.